Welcome everyone to the Steelers 360 podcast. This is the post-draft show, and this is your host, Patrick Gelish, and I am with my special guest, Blake Curtis. How are you doing today, Blake?
I'm great, Pat. Thanks for calling me special, by the way. That makes me feel good.
Hey, when you got an eye like yours, it's definitely special, what can I say?
I'll take that. Hopefully my eyes are right. The thing is, yeah, I actually have poor vision, but yeah. With contacts, they can correct that these days.
So. Yeah, luckily we have technology. So. Technology, you know, goes a long way when that. Yeah. But as far as learning football talent, you have a great eye, and that's why I offer to bring you on, because I know you have a great eye. And that being said, let's kind of delve into the Steelers draft. What do you think about the Steelers getting aggressive for the first time since Troy Polamalu and moving up in the first round, 10 picks, to get Devin Bush?
Yeah, I like it. As somebody who would say that I think in general prefer to not trade up in drafts, but whenever you see a guy who you just completely fall in love with, which the Steelers obviously did, and especially when the fall off from that position is pretty steep, once that guy you like is off the board, why not just go ahead, trade up and get him? And that's what they did. And actually, I really, really think that the Steelers did a good job in this draft. So it all starts with that first pick.
I pegged Bush as the Steelers' first overall pick. I did not think they were going to have to move up to get him, but I think that was the case. And I like that they moved in front of the Bengals, who had a lot of positions of need. Obviously, with the new coaching staff and new regime there, it's hard to say what they're going to do, what the Bengals' state of mind was, or if they were going to take Bush. The Steelers definitely felt like Bush was their man in the post draft press conferences. Not only did they talk about his talent, which is abundant, and his dress style, which is questionable at best, I would say, but they talked about his off the field. I think this was a trend with all the picks, where they talked about how they were off the field, and they said their character and how they carry themselves. And they said Devin Bush was an absolute leader, and you could see the fire in his eyes, and that he loved this game, and that his dad is obviously an ex-NFL player, so he knows, he's grown up around the NFL system, and he knows what it takes to be a great NFL player. And like you said, there was a huge, huge drop-off at middle linebacker, especially 3-4 middle linebacker after White and Bush. I mean, I can't even name who the third guy would have been. So
yeah, I mean, Devin White's got quite the off-the-field persona himself there, riding horses all around town.
Yeah.
Probably loves that Old Town Road song, but we're not going to get into that right now. I think, from what I hear, I think Devin Bush is a pretty good guy himself. So yeah. Both leaders and men, and you got to have that at the linebacker position.
And he led and he steps into a leadership position at inside linebacker with the Steelers, and that's something that he is going to have to be early on, because I think they have him pegged as a week one starter.
Oh, top 10 pick, he's got to be a week one starter, no doubt about it.
Yeah, the Steelers defense is famous for being complex and not playing rookies, but the last couple of years, that's kind of gone out the window with Bud Dupree and TJ Watt and even Artie Burns, who played his rookie year. So I do expect Devin Bush to make an early appearance, even if it's rotationally with some of the other inside linebackers that are still on the roster. I mean, Williams is still there. I mean, old and steady. I know he's going to play the other inside linebacker position. I think Devin Bush was a solid pick. Like I said, I had him in my mock draft, so obviously I felt that he was the guy that was the Steelers guy, and once again, for the third time in 4 years, I've hit the first round pick. So, that being said, them trading up, they did not have a second round pick. What did you think of round three, which was Diontae Johnson, a receiver out of Toledo?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. The first thing I saw out of Johnson, it was not a positive thing. He seemed to be a little bit lazy at times. He didn't play with a big sense of urgency, which is, I'm not going to say it's a huge knock on a receiver, because a lot of times, you know, the play is going away from you and, you know, you don't have to give all your effort, but you never want to see that as a pro prospect for sure. But the good thing about him is he's got a lot of really, really impressive traits, which is, I'm sure, why that they drafted him. But most notably, I'd say his release off the line of scrimmage is just outstanding, extremely quick. When he's coming in and out of his breaks, it's very sudden, you know, which makes it hard for cornerbacks to react. I think he's got a little bit of work to do. He had a few too many drops for me, but I can clearly see why they ended up selecting him, and this is what I just talked to you about before. You can't really teach somebody how to be quick like that. So I think he was, you know, all things considered, I think it's a good pick. You know, I like him. He's got tons of upside, and if you can just light a fire under him and get him going, he might be a player for you. So we'll see.
He's actually an interesting story because, like you said, pre-draft, there wasn't that much. There were people on the board, like Metcalf, etc., down there from Ole Miss, that garnered a lot of pre-draft hype, a lot more hype than Johnson. You know, the story that I have heard is a lot of people went to his pro day, and there were just a ton of receivers coaches at Toledo's pro day, and him being the only, you know, top receiver coming out of there, they were all watching him. And so with 9 or 10 or 11 teams out of 32 sending a wide receivers coach or even a head coach in some cases, like Tampa Bay, Johnson was obviously garnering a lot of NFL interest. What held him back was his 4.5 40 time. He plays much faster than that. And as the Steelers wide receivers coach said, some of the best, you know, Michael Irvin and Chris Carter and that some guy named Jerry Rice. Yep, there you go. All 4.5 guys. So speed is a great thing to have, but he plays way quicker than 4.5 would. His quickness and quick twitch muscle and his acceleration is top notch, and his other numbers were pretty solid throughout the combine, but I think that 4.5 did scare a lot of people off, or at least had him going a little bit lower in the draft.
You know, it's an interesting contrast, Pat, because when you talk about the guy like DK Metcalf, who's still on the board, you know, he'd almost be the opposite case, where, you know, he ran a really good 40, he's really big, he's really strong, he looks like just a human muscle. But I think teams are starting to wise up to the fact that that's not what football is. You're never running in, you know, spandex tights in a straight line down the field. So a guy like Johnson, he has these quick things that I don't think you can teach someone how to be quick. Those quick twitch muscle fibers are there, and they're in his body, and that's what's going to make him a good pro. You know, you can come in and out of your breaks like that as long as you can catch the football. I don't care how fast your 40 is, as long as it's not in the really, really low fours.
Yeah, as long as you're not, like, running a 5.5 or something.
Yeah. So I think we'll be all right.
So, like you said, I think the thing that makes him elite and makes him a third-round pick is his get-off-at-the-line, which someone his size actually needs, because he's going to face defensive backs that face wide receivers that are 6'4" and fast. And, you know, so he's going to be a little undersized compared to some of his competition. And one of the things, this is scout jargon, but the cadence of his get off is very, he mixes it up a lot. So, you know, one time he is hand fighting with you, well, next time he's blowing right by you, next time mixes it up so well that defensive backs are always on their heels and not able to get a good jam on him and get him, he is able to release freely at the line of scrimmage.
And that's super important. That's that's actually what I liked most about him. And just being able to do that is a trait that translates directly to the NFL, in my opinion. And sure, yeah, you know, he is small. I think he's about 5'11", 180. So he's not going to be the best blocker facing guys like you were just outlining there who are bigger and stronger. But blocking as a receiver is important, but that's not what they pay you to do. So I think his release and his quickness in and out of breaks, that's what you're looking for. That's why he ended up being a third-round pick. And I don't know, Pat, I think the Steelers have a pretty good track record of picking receivers. So
especially out of the MAC. You know, they like their little MAC receivers. They've done pretty good with over the last couple of years. The drops, I have to address this. The drops.
Yes.
He drops. One, he didn't have the best quarterback. Not to knock Toledo's quarterback, whose name is escaping me, but he wasn't Big Ben, who was also a MAC quarterback. I have to point that out.
The thing is with him is he's dropping passes that, from my film study, man, like a lot of them are just kind of inexcusable. You know, he's dropping touchdown passes. He's dropping stuff over the middle. I hope he's not afraid to get hit.
Yeah, what I saw is about four or five of those drops where he really had to extend from his body.
Yeah.
And, you know, he got both hands on the ball, so you think, darn it, that should be a catch. But he didn't come down with it. And like you said, in some cases, he was very wide open. And that's something that I think can be snuffed out. And I think the Steelers feel the same way. That can be addressed with time on the jugs machine.
Absolutely.
Just having some more confidence with that, working with this quarterback instead of arguing with him and beating up coolers. That's something that Johnson can do.
Who are you talking about? I don't get it.
I don't know. I forget his name. His name's escaping me. I think Johnson has just so much upside that you can't pass on him where he was. And it was in the press conference, and I'm going to liken back to the Buccaneers again. It was in the press, in the receivers coach's presser about the draft and taking Johnson. He said, you know, they asked, could they have gotten Johnson in round four, possibly, or round five? Absolutely not. The Buccaneers were going to take Johnson with their next pick. They had lost a receiver in free agency, and Johnson was the guy they had their eye on for replacing him. So Johnson was going to be a third-round pick, whether the Steelers took him or not. So that says a lot. And he actually said he got cussed out over the Steelers taking Johnson.
Should have picked him in the second round, then, Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
he liked him that much.
And they should have. Did Tampa Bay end up with White?
They did. Yes, they did.
They should have let White.
So they got at least one good player. That's for sure.
They should have let White go, so we could have got him and Bush. How about that?
Collaboration.
Right. Moving on to, and I have to just say, I did not have the Steelers drafting Johnson in the third round. We did not do trades in our mock drafts, so when the Steelers traded up, it kind of threw a monkey wrench in things. I did have them drafting a receiver with their second pick overall, but he went in the second round like I predicted. So
yeah, you nailed it, man. You're Pastor Damas. So
well, I just tried to do my homework and see what I see. But yeah, everyone was very high on Johnson, and he's coming into a wide receiver's room that has a proven star already in Juju Smith-Schuster. And you know what? There's a lot of young guys. Juju was the youngest guy in his draft, and James Washington was a rookie last year. He's still young, and Johnson's young also. So there's three young, high draft pick receivers that are sitting there. One's already very productive and has rapport with Roethlisberger, who is the Steelers quarterback for the next 2 years, and that'll probably be the end of his reign. They have Dante Moncrief in there, who's kind of a vet journeyman, and it'll be interesting. I know they said they're going to start Johnson on the outside, but we'll see if he ends up getting moved to the slot or they start working.
That's my prediction for you. I think he's going to be a slot guy.
Yeah? You think the size thing is just...
Well, just it plays into his strengths just to be able to match up with, you know, if somebody's bumping out there who is, like you described earlier, a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit slower, maybe a linebacker, he's going to be able to take advantage of that. That is a mismatch for sure. I don't know. You got a bigger guy, James Washington. Juju can play probably anywhere. But, yeah, I don't know. I think he'll end up in the slot.
You think James Washington's that much bigger? I think they're both pretty small guys.
Isn't he a little bit bigger?
I'm not.
Is he 5'11"?
I'm not quite sure on the measurements, but they both strike me as a little bit undersized.
Yeah, I mean, James Washington, I feel like he has some pretty long arms. But so he is 5'11", but he's 214, so he's got about 30 pounds on him.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, and he did play Big Five conference football at Oklahoma State, so.
Yeah, and he's got some long arms. And so he can extend a little bit.
While he didn't have a very productive rookie year, that's the norm for receivers to not really be productive as a rookie. And Washington wasn't, so we'll see what he does as a sophomore. I wonder if Johnson has a little bit more after the catch playmaker ability. And I also think Johnson is a step in and start right away special teamer.
Sure.
He's a return guy through and through.
You think he's going to be returning kicks?
Yeah, absolutely. Returning, see that? Returning through and through. They have Switzer returning punts. Johnson's going to be returning kicks. I think that he steps in and plays special teams right away. We'll move on to the Steelers' second third-round pick, which was another guy that I had pegged, just with a different pick. But,
yes, you did.
Justin Lane, the cornerback out of Michigan State. And... kind of like Johnson. I don't know. The Steelers like their guys that Johnson is a quarterback that moved to wideout, and Lane is a wide receiver that moved to cornerback. So the Steelers like their guys moving around. I think another high upside pick, you know, a bigger guy, long arms, can play, has played zone for a long time, you know, thrive in the Steelers' zone defenses. I don't know how well he'll do in man coming out of the gates. Still has some things to learn as far as the nuances of being a good corner. I don't think he's great in his back pedal. I think his back pedal suffers and his hip swivel suffers. I have to say that Lane, being a wide receiver, has great ball skills, and I wouldn't be surprised if he helped the Steelers defense, who really, really suffers with getting turnovers. I mean, almost laughably, the Chargers game comes to mind, where one Steeler hits another, and the second Chargers wideout comes down with the ball in the end zone instead of the Steelers getting a pick.
That's never good. Yeah.
That's never good. That just... Yeah, and that happened in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's a type of situation that, you know, the Steelers ranked, I think, 6th in the league last year in sacks, which, you know, that type of pressure generally equates to turnovers, but not for the Steelers. And so a guy like Justin Lane, I know he is not a lockdown corner, and I know that he's got a lot of work to do. But I think that given the zone, given the size, given his arm length, I think that he is in a position to thrive in the Steelers' defense. What do you think about
that? Sure. Well, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on this one, and that's okay. That's what scouting is all about. You don't want anyone to have a groupthink mentality, and it's okay to disagree. So this is actually the one pick where I didn't really like out of Steelers. Honestly, throughout their whole draft, I looked at everybody and I really saw what they saw, and I really enjoyed what they were saying. But with Lane, I just didn't like him. You know, I just thought that there's way too much separation in his coverage, okay? And I'm not talking just in zone, but oftentimes in zone coverage, when there's somebody in your zone, you try to get a little bit closer to him, right? Almost convert it into a man in some instances. He just seems a little bit slow to react. His foot fire wasn't there for me. I don't know, man. I just think it's a little bit of a reach for him. It seems almost like maybe they were targeting a corner with that pick and just just took him as if somebody else maybe was not on the board. But what I would have liked to see them do, Patrick, is you got some other late round picks. There was a guy on the board who I really liked, and that would be David Long, the cornerback out of Michigan. So why not take one of those later round picks, trade up a few slots, and, you know, get a guy like that who I think is just a way more developed cover guy. If I had one knock on the Steelers draft, it would be this guy. But, hey, I've been wrong before. I don't have a perfect record on judging DBs, but I just wasn't in love with him. You know, I just really liked a guy like David Long a lot more. He was available a few picks up. He ended up going to the Rams. But I was just saying, hey, in hindsight, why not trade up a little bit, get your boy out of Michigan, David Long, and I think he just was such a more complete player. That's my take on him. You know, this is the one guy who I wasn't crazy about, but that's okay.
Yeah, so let's talk about this. So this is a little bit of draft, you know, and where people's big boards are. The Steelers obviously have suffered greatly at drafting DBs. Artie Burns, first round pick, and he rode the bench all of last season in his prime rookie contract for, I mean, every time he was on the field, he was getting beat. It was absolutely, it was almost ridiculous, honestly.
Honestly, Pat, I think Lane's going to get eaten alive. I really do. I hate to say it, but I do.
Well, that's what I want to touch on is, now Burns was someone that didn't play, he didn't become a full-time football player until his either sophomore or junior season at Miami. He ran track also, so he didn't participate in off the field, you know, and I think Burns' football IQ was relatively low coming out of Miami, and he was kind of seen as, in his draft class, I'm going back a couple years now, in Artie Burns' draft class, he was seen as the last of the top-tier DBs in the first round. And that was a DB-rich draft. Not as rich as this draft, but he was seen as the last guy. And there are some things I didn't like his hip pivot to his right side was much quicker than to his left side. And, I mean, he had great straight-line speed, obviously, in his 40, but it doesn't matter if you're letting people get 15 yards behind you, which is the case with him at the moment. So we fast forward to 2019, and this pick, Lane coming out of Michigan State. And what's interesting is this class having so many corners. I talk about that draft being corner rich, but this draft was just so defensive-minded that a lot of people had the corners kind of shuffled. There was not a consensus number one corner. There wasn't. Some people liked, you know, Baker out of Georgia. The kid out of,
my personal favorite,
yeah, Washington, who I know you liked also. And then
Byron Murphy,
yep. Greedy Williams obviously fell. Late plummet. You know, he was a guy that people
thought. That was a surprise, for
sure. Yeah, absolutely. Rock Yasin, is that how you say it? The kid out of Temple?
Yep.
He was another kind of like dark horse that came out. His ball skills and his size and muscle mass, you know, teams fell in love with. And there were some players still on the board that other people, like yourself, liked. The kid out of Penn State. I can't pronounce his name, but he was still on the board. Like you said, the kid out of Michigan, Long?
Yep, David Long.
Long was still on the board?
He was taken a couple picks before.
Okay.
So my point was, you know, it's only a few picks up. He's on the board. I fell in love with him. Trade up for him.
Yeah.
You know, and it's easy to say that in hindsight. But, gosh, I mean, I don't know. Just wouldn't have been my selection, that's all. Yeah. But, hey, I'm not in charge, though.
And, yeah, right? If you were signing the checks, it'd be something different, right?
Absolutely.
So, unlike Artie Burns' draft, there was a lot of dispute over who was the top or who was better than who in this class, especially amongst the corner group. And it's going to be interesting to see how they all pan out, because if they're all stars, then they're going to change the league because there's going to be so many lockdown corners. Yeah, I think that Lane, like I said, is good for the scheme. I think that there's a lot of holes in this game, but I think that they brought in Artie Burns, who was more of a man corner with good 40 time and more of a track guy. And as you said, football is not a track meet, man. Football is not a combine.
Absolutely not.
And think at the end of the day, Justin Lane may not be the best all-around corner, but he's a heck of a football player. And I think his time as a receiver really benefits him as far as jumping route combinations in said zone. If he's in zone coverage, he may turn out to be a huge liability in man. And at that point, they may have to just combine Lane and Artie Burns and see what they get out of it. I don't know. But.
Well, let's not forget that Richard Sherman was a converted wide receiver who was selected in the fifth round of the draft as a corner. So, hey, who am I to say? Maybe Lane will end up being the next Richard Sherman.
You know, Richard Sherman is a guy that flourished in one particular coverage, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. He fit into that Seahawks scheme like a hand in a glove, that's for sure.
Legion of Boom definitely executed their scheme to perfection, and I don't know if this is a sign the Steelers are abandoning man and saying, you know, we're going back to our zone ways. Those are the zones that Tom Brady ate up alive.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I think that's a great idea. You got to have a little bit of variety. You can't just abandon one or the other.
Keep in mind, the Steelers did beat the Patriots last year and play the Patriots in the first game of the season this year. That being said, it'll be interesting to see. Also, I think that with Hayden and Nelson, the free agent signing, Lane does not have to be on the field immediately, which I think benefits him. I think he has a little bit of time to learn.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that throwing him right out. At cornerback, I know we touched on this in our first podcast where I had the Steelers going DeAndre Baker in that first round. He's a guy who plays with tons of confidence. And if there's any one thing that you don't want to do to a young cornerback in the NFL, it's throw him out into the fire and just have him getting eaten up and just ruin his confidence, because that's a hard thing to gain back. So you want to build that confidence. You want to put him in positions to succeed. And that's where that development and that growth, I think, comes from, is that foundation of confidence mixed with his obvious athleticism. So, yeah, if they're going to take an approach with slow playing him, that's a good idea. I would think that's probably best case scenario.
Essentially, you hit it on the head. That's what happened to Artie Burns, is he lost his confidence early last season. And he's one of those corners that's more speed and coverage than hitting and tackling. And I think Lane, with his size and strength, is going to be solid at the line of scrimmage, which is something the Steelers covet from their corners. And I think that they're, like I said, it's just a good schematic fit for him. But with that being said, like I said, there were other corners on the board right in that area. You said Long was a few picks in front of him, and the kid from Penn State was highly recruited, highly touted, and was still on the board. I think that...
And worth noting, Pat, is DeAndre Baker was selected 30th overall. So in a scenario, if the Steelers had not traded up, they may have been able to land that blue chip prospect.
They could have traded back and got extra.
But, you know, you never really know how the draft falls. So once one chip is off, one guy's off the table, everything changes, you know, that whole thing. But all things considered, they did a great job. So you can't get too nitpicky.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of the great job that they did, let's go on to the fourth round. Now we're moving to day three picks. Benny Snell Jr., running back out of Kentucky. He is not going to win any track meets, I'll tell you that.
It's true that.
And his dad, you know, another guy who comes from a football family. His dad played in the NFL. He is an absolute battering ram. What do you think about Snell?
I really like what the Steelers did by bringing in Snell. He is kind of a throwback, as you touched on before. He's a North and South guy. He's a bruiser. And I think that's the kind of game that can really translate to the NFL. You know, he's not dancing. He's not trying to get all these extra yards that he could maybe get in college that, you know, he's not going to get in the NFL. But what he will do is he's going to get plenty of yards after contact. I love that in an NFL running back. You know, if you need 1 yard and it's a goal line situation, throw in Benny Snow. He's that guy who will definitely get it for you. And one thing that I really like, almost what I like most about him, is that he was a foundational piece of Kentucky's rebuild, okay? He was there at the beginning when they weren't so good. And then his, you know, last season, they had one of the best seasons that they've had in a long time. And I think that speaks to him volumes as to what he is as a guy on the field for sure. But as part of that culture building thing that he did in Kentucky, that's something that the Steelers are definitely in need of, especially at the running back position. So I really like what they're doing here. And I think you guys got a Pittsburgh Steeler for sure.
Definitely looks like a Steeler on film, that's for sure. Don't quote me, but I believe Snell ended up leading the SEC in rushing last year? Or was he led over the last past two seasons combined? I don't know what's there's some stat.
I don't know, Pat. I don't have those numbers on hand either, but I'll tell you what, his film's pretty impressive.
You know, and he's the type of guy that if you let him, he'll rip a 20-yarder off and change the field position. And I think with the extension with Roethlisberger saying that they have two more years with him, and the offensive line being what it is at the moment, and the depth of the offensive line, I think once Ramon Foster steps down, I know he's a team captain and NFLPA representative and et cetera, but once Ramon Foster, who's probably the lowest rated offensive lineman on the team, steps down, there's some good young talent there to replace him. If we want to put Hawkins and move him in the guard, there's some guys that are ready to step up. But with the offensive line being as dominant as it is, and with the Steelers only having 2 years left with Ben Roethlisberger, and James Conner essentially not finishing either of the last two seasons because of lower body injuries, whether it's a meniscus or a sprained ankle, high ankle sprain, but Snell just adds the ultimate depth to the running group. He is a bruiser, and he is 5'10".
He's a workhorse.
5'10", 224 pounds.
And I think he runs bigger than that, which is almost crazy because that's pretty dang big for a running back. But the way he just carries his pads and just
runs right.
I don't know if I've ever seen anybody knock him backwards. You know what I'm saying?
He's
falling forward. He's carrying people, and he's getting those hard, gritty yards. And that's why he averages over 5 yards a carry in his career, which is very impressive in the SEC.
And
I like him a lot.
Ironically, Jalen Samuels, who is kind of like the speed back out of the group, is listed at 225. So he's actually a pound heavier. But with Samuels, Connor, and Snell, they definitely have a young, thriving group of running backs. And the Steelers always do this, and they've been doing it for a long time. And it's just smart front office work. It's part of the reason that Juju came in when Antonio Brown was being interviewed with or was being negotiated with under contract, is when James Conner's contract comes up, they're going to say, you know, we got this other kid, Snell, that's pretty dang good, and we like him a lot. And it's just a bargaining chip. It's a way of negotiating with their players, and they do it all through, you know, it's a way of adding depth, and they're known for doing this. And hopefully Snell continues to run like he did at Kentucky. Obviously, he's not gonna have the holes that he did in college. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's a different game. It's definitely a different game.
Because he wasn't fast in college. So is he going to be slow in the NFL?
I wouldn't say that he's going to be slow, no, because it's not his game, right? So you mentioned that Samuels is like a pound more than he is, but he's the speed guy. That's fine. But when you're a player tackling a player, and this guy is running full speed at you and wants to run through you, Okay, time and time again, this guy carried the ball 737 times in college, and he averaged 5.3 yards a carry, okay? So when this guy is running downhill physically, punishing you and punishing you and punishing you, that's a completely different type of player, right? So I'm not going to say he's going to be slow in the NFL, but he is who he is. He's going to be that downhill bruiser. The one thing I am worried about is those 737 carries. Like, that's a lot. That's a lot of carries in college. So hopefully his durability will be okay. Hopefully we haven't seen the best of him. Hopefully his tread isn't too low on those tires. But no, I'm not going to say he's going to be too slow by any means.
I always worry about tread, and that was one of my knocks on Le'Veon Bell. The fact that he was healthy to take 770 runs in college and was able to stay healthy in an SEC schedule on some teams that were bad at Kentucky when he was young says a lot. Hopefully,
yeah, I agree with you there, Pat. I mean, one thing that I'm completely worried about with Le'Veon Bell would be his workload and his ability to carry on at the high level that he's had. And man, I mean, that's obviously one of the biggest knocks on NFL running backs. They don't last for long, right? Once they hit 28 years old and to, you know, up to 30 years old, it's like that's it. That's all they got.
Yeah,
so,
you
got to
be special at 30. Absolutely. Or have a unique situation, because they'll have a younger guy that's faster that can do it for cheaper.
Yeah, and you know, one guy who I don't want to link names here, because I'm not big on players being compared to other players, but as far as workload-wise, you know, Cedric Benson in college had 1,100 attempts, right? But he did that in 4 years. Okay, so Benny Snell is over here basically on pace for the same workload as Cedric Benson in 3 years, he had 737. So that's something that I'm worried about. I grew up as a Bear fan, so I watched Cedric Benson. And, you know, he didn't look fresh coming in as a rookie. So that would be one thing that I would say is a major red flag for me. But other than that, I think he has a pretty well-rounded game. Would have liked him to catch a few more passes, but I don't think that's what the Steelers envision it as. So we'll see. You know, it's the beauty of the draft is you don't really know until they play on Sundays. So
yeah, and another guy that there's no pressure to, for him to be out there. He's another player that he's going to be third string, maybe run a package, a goal line package with him later in the season. But there's no hurry to get Benny Snell on the field right now.
Absolutely. A lot of upside, low risk.
Yep, absolutely. Speaking of a lot of upside, let's go to round five, where the Steelers went back to Michigan and selected tight end Zach Gentry. You know, they lost Jesse James in the offseason, and the tight end depth is definitely not there at the moment. So Gentry's an interesting pick. What was your impressions of him?
I had a few interesting things that stood out to me on film when I was watching him. The first thing is he's got some size, okay? You can't teach size. It's impossible to do, and he's got it. So he's 6'8", 265 pounds. All right, that's huge, 6'8". And with that frame, I would say, hey, you can pack on some more muscle. You might even be able to get a little more beef, and you might be a more effective run blocker than he was. It also says, hey, he might be a red zone threat that's going to be a mismatch down, you know, when he's anywhere in between 10 to 20 yards into the end zone. Who's going to match up with that 6'8" frame? I don't know of any 6'8" safeties or cornerbacks. So I'm saying that that's a huge advantage to him. But what is also true about that size is it can hurt you. Okay, so his pad level at the line of scrimmage can be disadvantageous, and his leverage might be given up. He might not be as effective in his blocking technique as he needs to be. But also, he put up 12 reps on the bench press, okay? I'm not a combine numbers guy. It doesn't concern me that much, because I think his play strength is actually a lot better than 12 reps. I think he generates a lot of his power from his lower body. And I actually think that he's a decent blocker. You know, he's a hands catcher when he does catch the ball. He didn't have a crazy amount of production. He had 49 catches in his career and 4 career touchdowns. But he is intriguing to me. And in kind of a not-so-serious note, you know that guy from Happy Gilmore, the guy who had the nail in his head?
Yeah,
and he says,
yeah,
I'm going to meet with you in the parking lot. And you kind of see him. Yeah, you see him running like, you know, oh, like a big ogre. that's kind of the way this guy runs. He's a little bit awkward, honestly. His size is almost weirdly
clunky.
You know, it's weird. It's funky. Yeah, that's a good word for it. So he's definitely an intriguing prospect. I'd say that. You know, I think he's worth a draft pick, but he's kind of hard to gauge with that lack of production. And, you know, you don't see as much as you'd like on film, but he definitely has a lot of potential. I'll say that.
So my take on him is that he is basically a 6'8" receiver. I don't think that, like you said, his pad level and his strength, you take both of those things into account, and you take strong defensive ends like Von Miller and et cetera. I'm sorry, what's his name for the Browns? Their first overall.
Miles Garrett.
Miles Garrett, and they're going to be throwing him around like a ragdoll.
I agree.
He definitely is not going to be in there like Heath Miller was, trying to put these defensive ends on their butt. That being said, if they kind of accept what he is and say, hey, you are a receiver in a Giants body, maybe, you know, and strength is something that can be added. You know, that's an attribute. You know, you can't teach height. You know, you can teach bench press reps, though. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was a lot stronger by the beginning of the season. There's going to be a training camp battle because there is a guy who was an unrestricted free agent last year, Christian Scotland Williamson. And he's a 6'9" tight end on the Steelers roster. And he's 274 pounds. So he's got a little bit more bulk. I think they're going to be fighting for that third tight end spot. I think Gentry and he are poised to square off in training camp for the third tight end spot, or maybe a practice squad. But there's not depth right now. Both tight ends are receiving targets in Vance McDonald and Xavier Grimble, or the top two tight ends, I should say. And the Steelers don't really have an elite inline blocker, which is very un-Steeler-like, but it kind of says, and they do it a lot, we're going to bring in a tackle and make him our tight end in run-heavy formations. They like to do that a lot last year, and last two seasons they've been doing that. And so I think that this guy kind of, he has unique upside. You know, you don't see too many 6'8" guys. But Jesse James was 6'6" or 6'5". And I hated Jesse James's gameplay because as big as he was, he never broke a tackle. And at least Vance McDonald, who is now the incumbent number one tight end, will break a tackle. And he runs like a bull, you know?
Yeah, I absolutely love Vance McDonald. For the record, that guy's he's an animal. Once I saw him do what he did to former Chicago Bear Chris Conte, oh my goodness, he made that man look like a child. I believe that Vance is a stud, and let's call it what it is. When you get into these fifth, sixth, seventh round picks, you start looking for some guys who might be able to come in and make an impact, but a lot of times they're developmental guys, and that's kind of who I see Gentry as, so.
Yeah, like I said, you know, fighting another developmental guy in Christian Scotland Williamson. It'll be interesting, the battle of the Giants for that third spot.
I like it.
Speaking of Giants, I know as a Bears fan, Adam Shaheen is a Giant tight end that you guys have on your roster. He hasn't really panned out.
But he hasn't done a dang thing, and I did not like that pick at all from day one.
The one thing about this guy that I have to say is Gentry's size is kind of like natural. He didn't bulk up all in the day.
Yes.
And hopefully the Steelers can keep him from doing something like Shaheen did, where he bulked up so quickly that he became injury prone and uncoordinated.
Yes, and I know we've had conversations about this, Pat, and I really do believe that's my theory on him. When somebody puts on 30, 40, 50 pounds that their entire natural life they have not had on them, their muscles and their joints and everything holding that body together is not used to it, and it's going to fail. And I think Adam Shaheen is the poster boy of that theory. And, you know, like you said, this guy's got that natural size, so hopefully he can stay healthy where Shaheen has not been able to do that.
I think we've touched on the tight ends pretty well here. Moving on to the sixth round, the Steelers picked some outside linebacker help. They picked Sutton Smith. They went back to the MAC. He's out of Northern Illinois University. I had not followed Sutton Smith very much pre-draft. What are your takes on him?
Yeah, I actually was in the same boat as you, where I hadn't really followed him as much pre-draft as I did post-draft. But once I started watching his film, I really liked what I saw. Part of it, I think the reason why he fell, he's only 6 foot tall, 233 pounds. He's got some short arms. And that kind of puts him in that tweener category where nobody really wants to be. But that aside, once you watch him, you love what you see. He's just an explosive guy. He's a football player. He's got great get-off. I mean, really, really good get-off. Outstanding motor. And he's got some bend around the corner that, you know, maybe a guy who's bigger and taller doesn't have. So his acceleration has me really excited to see what he can do, maybe as an outside linebacker for you guys. But what I like most is he just plays with 100% intensity all the time. So I think he's going to be an exciting person to follow for the Pittsburgh Steeler faithful.
Yeah, the Steelers the last couple years have drafted some late round linebackers, and a lot of them have ended up sticking. Keon Adams comes to mind, number 99. This is going to be his second season, or third season, I'm sorry. And he really hasn't seen the field much, but he's managed to stay on the roster. Sutton Smith, like you said, is a little undersized. It's funny because the other option the Steelers have at outside linebacker is a defensive end converted to an outside linebacker in Anthony Ciccolo, and they just re-signed him or gave him an extension, and I just hate the way he plays. He plays slow. He's no speed. He plays like a guy from the 70s, you know, like, I'm going to hold this gap and not really do much else.
He's the polar opposite of Sutton Smith.
Exactly. He's the polar opposite, and I like the Sutton Smith. You know, he's kind of like all over the field for an outside linebacker, and he's a little terror. I could see why he fell to the sixth round, being in the MAC and being undersized. What's he going to do against a 6'8", 350-pound guy that has incredible footwork? Can he even get around that guy? Does he have the speed or the strength, or can he get into the pads, or what's he going to do when he faces that? Is going to be the question. One thing that Ciccolo had is, you know, he came from the University of Miami, and he played in the ACC and had some higher-level competition. And this is a guy that did not face as much athleticism as Ciccolo did. But when you're shopping in the sixth round, you're shopping for upside. And I think Sutton Smith is one of those guys that he's almost so small that he has the listings. He almost looks like a strong safety.
Yeah, and one thing I was going to touch on him is he's a sixth-round pick, okay? So his floor, though, I think for a sixth-round pick is actually pretty high because, sure, you can bring him in potential pass-rushing-only situations, and that's his upside. But his floor is, the way he plays, he's going to be an outstanding special teamer.
Yeah.
You know, he's a 4'6"-something 40, 4'6"-9, I believe. He's fast and he's relentless. So I see him as an immediate special team impact guy with upside of, you know, maybe coming in and rushing the passer and getting some sacks.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if he makes the roster this season, it'll be as a special teamer. We'll see if he gets any work with the defense, but the Steelers have some holes to fill. The special teams was poor last year, and a lot of the people are gone now. So we are going to have to see if some of this young blood can add some new life and fill some of these holes that were left by last year's departures. Moving on, we have Isaiah Bugs, a defensive tackle out of Bama.
Yes.
What do you think about him?
Pat, I like this guy a lot, and he's actually a guy who, what I do on my website, scoutingsavant.com, is I do rebuilds for team. And I actually selected him as part of my rebuild for the Oakland Raiders. And when I watch him on film, he is just, he's a playmaker. You go into a game watching Quinnen Williams or, you know, watching Jennings or a lot of other of those really good players on the Alabama defense. But what keeps happening, or at least what kept happening in my film study, is that that bug just pops up time and time again, just making play after play. He's in the backfield. He's lined up in a 3 technique. He's lined up in a 5 technique. And he's just a bull in the china shop. Now, I know he had a lot of elite talent around him, like I just outlined. But when he's popping up time and time again, that's all he can do, right? Like, you can't hold that against him. He's working with what he's working with, and he's dominating when he needs to. So he's just a guy who has a knack for the football, knack for making plays, and I just think he's capable of bouncing inside and out. He provides a little bit of versatility, and he plays with both speed and strength for his size. So he's got a good little get-off. He accelerates well, and he collapses the pocket. And when he's on the backside of a run, he's got some nice little acceleration to collapse that backside, cut off any cutback lanes. So I like the guy. I like the guy a lot. He's one of my favorite picks of the Steelers.
It's interesting because I think he could have stayed at Bama another year and ended up being a high round pick.
He could have, absolutely. But that's the beauty of it for the Steelers is you got that value. So I'm not going to disagree with that at all. But he's just a guy who I think just provides tremendous value this late in the draft.
Yeah, I think all these late third day picks, 5th, 6th, 7th round, are people that you can't really monetize with a 40 or with their combine numbers, but they're football players.
Absolutely. And that's one thing I would agree with that 100%.
That the Steelers really, in this draft in particular, went after. They said, forget what the numbers say, we're going to get some football players in here to compete. And Isaiah Bugs is headed for the practice squad. They re-signed Dan McCullers, and they got Javon Hargrave, the Gravedigger, in there at nose tackle. Outside, they have Tuitt and Cameron Hayward, so he's not supplanting any of them anytime soon. The main backup is Tyson Alualu, who was a first-round draft pick. He is steady player, and he can play inside and outside, which Bugs projects to be able to do too. You know, Bugs can play, I don't know if he'd be able to play a 1 per se, but he definitely could play a 3 and a 5.
I would agree with that.
And when the Steelers go to their nickel package, that's basically what they have out there, is people playing the 3 technique and the defensive ends, kind of. He did make some plays. What impressed me about Bugs is when it was his time to make a play, he made a play.
Absolutely. Every time.
He was very consistent. You know, he wasn't running over people and jumping over someone and running down a quarterback that was breaking the pocket. But, you know, if you came towards Bugs, there was a very high likelihood that Bugs was going to make the tackle. And speaking of making tackles, what do you think about Ulysses Gilbert, the third, the line? We're staying back in the MAC again. Linebacker out of my hometown of Akron.
Sure, and actually I believe really what you just said about picking football players is what the Steelers did here with Gilbert. He's solid across the board. I don't necessarily say, hey, he does this thing really, really, really well, or he lacks in this area, but, you know, he just does everything good. I think his best attribute, if I had to put my finger on it, would be his coverage ability. I think he drops into coverage well. And while he's not perfect, you know, he's got a little bit of technique things that he needs to work on and a little bit more keeping that head on a swivel at times. But I like what I see. From what I've read and what I've seen about him is he's got all of the intangibles, and he's been a student of the game. So the mental side of the game, which is usually linebacker, is there. But one thing, it's kind of a subtlety that I picked up on film, Pat, is, you know, some guys, when they make plays, they celebrate, they do their own thing, and it's all about them, right? And sometimes teammates don't rally around players like that. But what I noticed about Gilbert is when he makes plays, everybody is excited and just really pumped up for him that he's making plays. And I know that sounds a little silly because this is football and we're not singing Kumbaya or whatever, but I think that's something that can't be overlooked. His teammates rally around him. And when it's a late pick like this, that's almost enough for me to say, you know, I give you my stamp of approval. So I like that a lot about him. I think that's another thing that the Steelers need in their locker room is a guy like that. So although I'm not going to say he's going to be the best football player and have the most production in the world, I think he's a good addition at the same time. So, yeah, that's what I got on him.
Yeah, it's interesting because out goes LJ Fort and in comes Ulysses Gilbert. Without my favorite attribute of his is definitely his football IQ. I noted that he does have some slick hips in coverage. He's got a nice back pedal. As far as zone coverage, I don't know how you felt about him in man. You know, and that likens him to the Steelers' zone coverage schemes. He's a little bit like Vince Williams, the Steelers' inside linebacker right now, in that, well, Vince will absolutely hit you and take your head off. And I'm not sure that Gilbert has the strength and just the wood to actually do that yet. He hasn't proved, you know, he's not a proven NFL commodity. But if he does develop, he could end up being the linebacker next to Bush. And with Bush playing the weak side, the buck, and Gilbert playing the strong side, Mac. That being said, the reason I say that is we need the Mac to be good in coverage, which has been something teams have exploited in the past. Vince Williams was always slow, and as he's getting older, he's just getting slower. And bringing in some new blood, LJ Fort was kind of the answer to that. They'd bring him in their nickel package to kind of, especially late in the season, to kind of be the inside linebacker that was fast enough to get to his drop point in coverage. And Ulysses Gilbert is definitely that. We'll see, can he shed blocks in the run game and be as hard-nosed as some of the other guys in the inside linebacker group? I think coming in next to Bush allows him to kind of takes a little bit of pressure off of him. Granted, he makes the team. You know, having two inside linebackers in there might mean that Gilbert doesn't make the roster. But granted, he makes the team, I think that he can sit back and kind of learn while Bush is out there taking the knocks, so to speak.
Sure, and I mean, obviously, we're talking about a late-round guy. And if he could come in, you know, start making plays as a contributor to the defense, then golly, you found a stud.
If you find a contributor in the 200s, he's
you're doing good, man. Yeah. You got the eye, that's for sure. But yeah. Hey, the Steelers have done it before, so
yeah,
it's not possible. But yeah, I mean, we'll see, man. It's always exciting to follow these late-round guys and root for them and, yeah, just listen the best.
Yeah, and interesting, the last guy we have to talk about, speaking of, he ended up going 219 overall, was Derwin Gray. And he is a guard out of, God, I mean, the Steelers really stayed in Big Ten country with the Big Ten. he's a guard out of Maryland who is a newer Big Ten school, but they are in the Big Ten. What'd you think about Gray?
Yeah, so Pat, I've had the privilege of recently working with a coach at my current job who had played 11 years in the NFL, okay? So he's been able to teach me a lot of stuff about technique and what you can do, you know, to, you know, advance your leverage and seeming to your base and really just control your momentum in certain ways. And really, what I like out of Gray is I see a lot of what he's telling me about. You know, he's a technically sound guy. He's kind of a mauler who I see as a guy who might be more effective as a run blocker than a pass blocker. But he uses his hands really well to give himself really good leverage. And he's got a really strong inside punch that I like a lot. And really, you know, he had a dominant performance against Ohio State. He was making a bunch of key blocks that were screening some big runs. And he was a part of a 360 yard rushing day against the Ohio State University. Okay, and a lot of that was just on his back. So
they almost upset. They almost upset Ohio State.
They did. I think they lost by 1 point. Don't quote me, but I think they lost by 1 point in that game. So he was a huge part of that. And, you know, with that film alone, I was very impressed with what he can do, especially in the running game. And we both know that Steelers are going to try to rely on that. So, yeah, I mean, I like it. I like it a lot, actually, especially at this point in the draft, going back and being able to look at him. He's got my attention, I'll say that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I said, if there's a player on the offensive line that's going to go, it's Ramon Foster. He's the oldest, and he was an unrestricted free agent out of Tennessee that ended up sticking at left guard. And Hawkins is right now a tackle. He can't stay healthy, so we have Matt Feller playing right tackle with Justin Gilbert getting traded away. Right tackle's kind of been a revolving door, although the Steelers have always had a solid player there. With that being said, the Steelers' backup interior linemen kind of have some diversity. B.J. Finney can play guard and center, a little undersized. That is not the case with Gray. Gray is a big, strong, coordinated mauler. And especially if in 2 years Gray's in his prime and Ben is hanging it up and the Steelers decide to go run heavy while whoever's developing a quarterback, this draft may kind of liken towards that with Snell and Gray and all these parts in the offense that lead to a sound, consistent power running game. And over a 17-week schedule, 16 games, and hopefully more, granted they make the playoffs, you know, in the NFL, people are going to get hurt. And so you always need, especially in the trenches, you always need a good backup lineman, a solid guy that can come in there and move someone out of the way. I don't know what his combine or his pro day numbers were. I don't know how many bench presses he put up or his strength.
He put up 26 bench press reps.
Yeah, he's strong.
Which is pretty solid. Yeah, it's pretty solid. Yeah. I mean, it's not elite, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, anything above 24.
He's got long arms, too. And I'm a person who actually has long arms as well. So I always hate the guys in there pumping out big weight with short arms. So I'm almost going to say that just by default, you know, let's bump that up to 28, 29.
Yeah.
That's my take on it.
Because of his length. The one thing that, you know, definitely the thing that makes him a seventh-round pick is his pad level. That's one thing that just needed work, and it's going to be interesting. I could see him on a practice squad. I could see him making the roster, maybe, or getting called up during the season. Finney has been the incumbent backup lineman on the inside for a couple of seasons now, and he's held that spot pretty well, especially because he can bump inside the center if he needs to. Derwin Gray is definitely bigger and stronger than B.J. Finney, and he definitely played against elite competition at Maryland and on a bad team. So it's going to be interesting, like I said, you know, if you get anything out of a 219th overall pick, it's a win. And if he can come in and even just provide motivation for Finney to get stronger or faster or whatever, Derwin Gray projects to be like probably a practice squad or journeyman lineman to me, in my opinion.
Sure. But, and I think the last thing I'd say on him is one of my personal knocks on him was he didn't really have the quickness or maybe the agility that I see out of a really good left tackle in the NFL. So I would almost like to see the Steelers bump him to either left or right guard, where he can just kind of more naturally play into his own strengths and use those long arms and be that big mauler that you need in the trenches. But yeah, I agree, Pat. He's got some potential, and he might be a journeyman.
They list him at guard, actually. And, you know,
who's that?
The Steelers. Yeah. Steelers are
lifting. Oh, well, there you go. Perfect.
And, yeah, that's why I was, tackle. That's why I was saying he's going to be an interior lineman. They're listing him at guard, and Ramon Foster, who I said would be the next lineman out of there, is the left guard. So I think that's where I just think DeCastro's in there at right guard. I don't think you're going to supplant him.
No. 0%.
Yeah. And I don't think a seventh round rookie comes in to supplant Ramon Foster, who's been, 7-5 in that range year starter. He's been there a while, though. And they already have Finney as the backup there. So I think that's the battle, is Derwin Gray versus BJ Finney for the backup interior lineman position.
I like that. I think it's a good fit for him. I think that's actually, like I just said, actually, that's exactly where I would see him. So, hey, we're in agreement again.
Yep, absolutely. That is our coverage. We went a little long today. We had a lot to cover. But that is our take on the Steelers draft in 2019. I just want to thank Blake for his time and coming on and contributing to all these podcasts. Blake, you got anything to say? You're always welcome to be back. I'm sure I'll have you back during the season.
I enjoyed my time here, Patrick, and I like what the Steelers did. I like who they are as an organization, unless they're playing the Bears. So bear down, go Steelers, and I'll be back sometime. So I look forward to it.
All right. Well, this is Steelers Wire and Steelers 360. My name is Patrick Gellish. Thanks for listening, and we're signing off. You guys have a great day.